And the word was gesture. Word was not gesture. Not a defined meaning utterance.
Yeah.
So what it just shows in the clue is the antenna, because being an artist, right?
Yeah.
So he saw everything first, then the academics sort of mock up.
Right. The book guys eventually have to write books along that line, but other media used McLuhan. Many people made millions using McLuhan. Norman Lear did. A lot of people, Tom Wolfe. But the thing is that we have to see that TV is not verbal. The TV, the living transmission, is that primitive ESP tactile mental dance. That's television. And everybody's sharing it. You're looking at something that's happening live. You first had it under radio conditions. Someone's speaking live to you. And you're also hearing something that's not in your neighborhood. The whole world is hearing someone on the radio. Everybody's in that room, and that room is in the radio station. So yes, this is what Joyce understood. It's really interesting. If you read Don Field's thesis, which he did under McLuhan in the 50s, he talks about Yeats, Eliot, Pound, and Joyce, the four of them. And it's all Marshall's work. Then Don worked for the minute. He's a 24-year-old, a smart student, and he just gets the basis of McLuhan and then does it as a thesis. And I think Don says this in his book, First McLuhan. When McLuhan was one of the, what do you call them, when you have the peer review of the thesis? What's it called? The oral?
The oral, yeah, the defense.
Yeah, the defense. But what do you call the people you're doing it with?
Committee? Pricks, usually.
What?
Pricks.
Pricks, yeah, the pricks. So, the committee of pricks. On the committee of pricks was McLuhan. And so the interesting point is why did he put down Don's thesis? He argued, he said, this is crap. But McLuhan's literary enemy, Woodrow, or Woodhouse.
Right.
No, a guy named Woodhouse. He was the head of the literary department. He told Don, he defended Don. So did McLuhan know that he didn't want to make sure that Woodhouse didn't recognize it was Marshall's stuff? So Marshall pretended that he disagreed with the thing. And Woodhouse, who hated McLuhan's work, didn't know, recognize that Don's stuff was McLuhan. Yeah. But the point is the tactile interplay of these four people with Lewis. Thiel didn't have enough time to get to Lewis, but Lewis would be a factor. Marshall got mad at him because he didn't include Lewis. But Don, this young guy, had to do it. And you couldn't get Lewis's works. They were in the National Gallery locked away. His paintings and that. It's hard to get because Lewis had been suppressed. So
Bob, you're leading up to the fifth school.
Right.
Lewis, like C.S. Lewis?
No, Wyndham Lewis. Oh, where's Wyndham?
Wyndham couldn't make it.
Okay, this is Matt Shepard, who is on Cloak and Dagger, and he does our website. And what else do you do, Matt, in relation to this?
Okay. Institute.
Well, what he did is he produced a child a few months ago, and he named it after Wyndham Lewis. So we almost had Wyndham here.
So you named your child Wyndham?
Mm-hmm. Nice. Bravo. Was because of the Wyndham Lewis name? Am I right on that?
Well, I was thinking Wyndham Lewis, and my wife was thinking of Wyndham Earl.
Oh, okay. From Twin Peaks. From Twin Peaks, yeah.
We thought that was a good combination.
That fits. So the point is that the interplay of those four artists, Joyce, he describes the interplay of those four people and then creates a book that puts it all together. Each one of those poets and artists saw aspects of this radio tactility. But Don's thesis shows how they do it. So then if you read Don's thesis, you get the background of McLuhan's mentors, and then you see the importance of Finney's Wake. But Finney's Wake is just a book, but it's the last book. So, the fifth school meeting called...
The thesis on the shelf over in the Robarts Library. Mm-hmm.
Don's thesis, yeah.
He wants to read it.
Well, he may be reading it soon, when he gets the time, and put it on our website.
Don's?
Yeah, he's supposed to send it to you this week.
Good.
Yeah, because you lost it when your computer's crashed.
I found half of it.
Oh, okay. So, so what is the fifth school of mediacology? In 1990, the Berlin Wall went down, and CNN got high ratings, and there was live coverage of protests in China. It was a paradigm-shifting time. And within a few years, everybody understood what McLuhan meant by global village, because they, being literate, visually biased people, thought that it was not a global village, and the United States disappeared. Whereas we've been a global village since radio time. And people think power is in politics. But these bureaucracies are saying, I understand global village. And and then the internet brought in this torrent of images, media unlimited. So people had to really look at the word media, enthusiastic, whatever level you interpret McLuhan. So Wired magazine finally names McLuhan patron saint. So I figured out that this was the living technology that Kroger understood. And was celebrating McLuhan because the Android meme had died. And as it died and saw its old life last before it, he saw there was a pattern to its life of technological history that led to its living. So it's dying and seeing its life, and he sees the order, and he sees that the law and order in it was what McLuhan wrote about. So all through the 90s, the Barry Nevitt School of Media Ecology, Toronto School, the Croker School, the New York School, and then the Croker Montreal School, and the POB Diasporic School, all celebrated and rode the wave and got all kinds of books out and did quite well. All right? But they were responding to the end or means welcoming of McLuhan. So the fifth meet school of media ecology is the living technology replaying the insight of Finnegan's Wake and celebrating it. All right? So if you go and read this essay, you will see there's a sixth school of media ecology. And you'll read it, and it just says, you're looking at it, which is the website that he made. You guys are looking at the Sixth School of Media Ecology right here. Okay? Now, what is that?
What do my notes say to me?
Where do I go from here? So we have got to be.
What? Time for the scintillating abstraction.
Oh, yeah, now we have the abstractions. Yes, now we can win. So,
wait a second.
Wait a second. This will be considered. What?
The fifth school went by too quick.
Okay.
I didn't catch it. Give me the fifth school again.
Now, look. You're going like this, Bob. Across your eyes. There's a literate person. You couldn't read it. You need to see it in page form, right? You couldn't catch it with your eyes. So your visual bias, your sense of plenary awareness, which you missed earlier, you need to know it like the back of your hand. And you were spreading the back of your hand across your eyes as you did that. So you can read people. You're a former psychic.
Hey, you guys rehearsed this.
So I'm going to try, you need more on it. We all need more on it, because this is really difficult. How to explain how, remember, there's only one thing in the world. Within the world of language, not these bodies that die, and we don't know where they go after. They might go somewhere, they may not, right? Let's pretend we don't know whether we survive death. But if we do survive death, then that's a soul or a private civil consciousness. That private civil consciousness comes in, reincarnates into this world, assuming this thought form, reincarnates and leaves. When it enters this world, it enters an ongoing project made by humans, which we call second nature. Eric uses this term, Eric McLuhan. Second nature is the artifacts that humans made. When Adam was kicked out of the Garden of Eden, he was given the power to make his establishment, his world. So we're eventually going to become co-gods, or we've been co-gods all along. But we're creating second nature, and the creator, whatever it was, made first nature. Our souls are part of first nature. So when we come into this world, we interact with language and second nature and all the things that humans make, and we come and go. But the second nature evolution carries on, no matter what. So that's why people are confused. They come into this world and they've got soul issues to deal with here, trying to connect to other souls, but they're mediated through this whole cultural history. So people always will confuse their public or private awareness, public being the shared meme of any medium that the culture uses. All right?